like to introduce our main speaker of the evening.
Jughead.
Mark Reynolds, thank you.
That's what it says here, San Diego. Yeah, lots of that.
Jughead, that's cute. Cool. My name is Mark Reynolds. I'm an alcoholic. I drank too much coffee again, dude. Jeez. And I took Excedrin, so I'm spinning right now. I've been sober since May 12, 2005. I got a sponsor, and my home group is La Jolla Speakers Group. I'm cheating on them tonight to come speak here with you guys. AA is the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life, without a doubt. And taking the steps is the best decision I've ever kind of been forced to make. It wasn't really a choice I made. It was just kind of happened like that. I'll explain that later. Larry, thanks for asking me to speak again. God, you tell me 6 months before I'm supposed to speak, man. It just bugs me out the whole time. Every time I get happy, I'm like, hey, this is great. I'm like, oh, I got to speak. Speaking like 6 months ago, dude. I get a call like 3 a.m. My chick's like, who's that? Who's texting me? I'm like, it's Larry Lay telling me I have to speak. Like, right, Larry Lay, right. So thanks. Thanks for getting me in trouble at home and ruining the last 6 months. I guess I'll just jump right in, man. We grew up Catholic. You know, I was an altar boy. Yeah. Don't let the tattoos fool you, man. I'm a nice guy. And I was going to do the Tim Tebow prayer before I got up here, like right here. With that. Would have been over the top. I don't want to do it. We grew up, my mom was super Catholic, man. And we had all the stained glass and the Pietà, like holding Jesus, and like all the Virgin Mary and Jesus, Joseph, and all this stuff. Father Don Murphy would come by the house, and once a week he'd eat, and Father Phil Serrano, the Italian guy, and it was cool. It was what it was. I didn't think there was any other way of life, you know. And I remember my brother and I were altar boys, and we just kind of made, from the get-go, I was like 10, 11 or 12, whatever old I was, and I would just make fun of the whole thing. You know, we would have the Eucharist, which is a little wafer they give you. And we would, like, dude, if we had some cheese, we'd call them Jesus. You know what I mean? We'd joke around, you know. You pour them in a bowl of, you pour them in a chalice, and be like, dude, put some wine in there, and we'll have Christ checks, you know. And that was like our, it was a big joke, you know. And I thought I was going to hell anyway from the get-go when they said, Mark, you know, Jesus Christ died for your sins. And I was like, what I heard was, Mark, you killed Jesus. You know what I mean? That's what I heard. And I was like, dude, I'm doomed, you know? And I thought I was going to hell for sure. And I was going to hell in a fast car, you know? So when alcohol finally came around, it was like, yeah, let me try that. And it made everything. Dude, I drank way too much coffee, dude. Jesus, I can't even catch my breath, man, like I did a speedball or something. Anyway, sorry. So when I started drinking, I was, you know, it was, there was always, we're Irish, man. There's always booze in the house. And my parents had this little bar thing with this diamond tuck little cushion elbow thingies with the little buttons in the middle. It was gorgeous, man. And they would pour, they buy a brand new bottle of whatever, and they pour it on the water for crystal, and they would put it all up on the thing. The mirrors would bounce off it, and the sun would shine through, you know, the window, and it would bounce through the water for crystal off the back of the mirror, and it would just shoot these prisms all over the house, man. And like, out of all the religious icons in our house, it was like, whoa! Like, that was the most sacred thing in our house, man, was this big friggin' altar of niceness, you know what I mean? I was like, dude, that's where it's at. And my parents were into, like, jazz, like, Billie Holiday, Frank Sinatra, and all this stuff, so we had good music, and, like, everything was like, and they entertained a lot, you know. So they always have, you know, people over, and we weren't wasting no time. We were grabbing, you know, little scotch, you know, whatever the hell was left in there. Oop, cigarette butt, oop, finish that off, whatever. We didn't, we get, you know, I stayed drunk from the get go, man. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know that it was, you know, there wasn't DARE back then. There wasn't a DARE cop that came to your school and told you about alcohol. We just drank, you know. And I remember as I got a little bit older, my friends would, you know, you start going to these kooky little parties or whatever, and everyone's like, oh my God, we're going to go play Spin the Bottle. Like, Spin the Bottle? Let's go steal a fucking car. What are you talking about, dude? You know what I mean? I just didn't get it. I didn't understand. I didn't get it. And I was just I was kind of a bad kid, man, to be honest with you. I'm not a nice guy, dude. I would go out in the middle of the street with my buddy, and we would pull manhole covers off the friggin' middle of the street and just leave. Just leave, you know what I mean? Can you imagine? You know what I mean? And if you're on a motorcycle, you're dead, dude. You're absolutely dead. And I drive a motorcycle now, and I'm just like, what if some little shady bastard, man? So I'm hyper aware of the friggin' manhole covers in the street now. And I remember I got this was like 5 years ago. I don't even know why I'm bringing this up, but I got a parking ticket downtown. And one of the meters, the meter didn't expire, and I'm right there, and the little meter go-kart dude is right there, and I'm thinking, all right, I got a few cars before he makes it up. Little do I know, he's reading my little thing, punching it in, walks up, gives me the ticket, and I was like, dude, I'm here. How does that even count? You know, I'm present. How are you going to give me a ticket? I'm here. And he's like, whatever, dude, just $40. And I was like, oh, is that right? I went home and I grabbed these latex gloves. I grabbed a hoodie. I grab a skateboard and two black cans of spray paint. I wait till like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I go down there and I'm skating, and I spray paint the friggin' heads of 100 parking meters downtown. Black, the window, so no one can see who's what. For probably 3, 4, 5 weeks, everyone got free parking downtown. How long is it going to take you to wash all that stuff off of there? So I was a little vindictive bastard, man. I showed them. I haven't even made amends for that yet. What the hell am I going to do about that? I just ratted myself out. That's funny. But, I had a good childhood. I started drinking, man, and I thought that was like the normal way of life. And my buddies would, Star Trek was on at midnight. And back in the day, you had little rabbit ears, a little bit of foil hanging out. You know, it was like this big chinga. And you're like, no, dude, if you stand, just stand right there, and you're going to get better reception. So I got my buddy sitting like this, you know what I mean? So I would watch Star Trek, and I lived downstairs, and my parents were upstairs. So I would just go pour, you know, myself a big glass of, like, wine or whatever the hell was down there, whatever they were drinking. My parents never got a stiff drink, man. I watered all that shit down. I watered everything down. But I would top this glass off of wine, and I would just sit there and drink this wine and just get, you know, watch Star Trek and just get smashed, you know. And this is, I'm in 8th grade, 7th grade, 9th grade, whatever. And my friends would be like, hey, dude, we got a 12-pack. I'm like, a 12-pack? Dude, I get drunk every night, dude. What are you talking about, a 12-pack? Who cares, man? And so I did my thing. And then unfortunately, there was a guy down the street, or maybe fortunately, I don't know, whatever. However you want to look at it, there's a dude down the street who was into heavier stuff. He was into heroin, and I hung around him a little bit, and you hang around the barbershop long enough, you're gonna get a haircut, man, and it didn't take too long, and I loved it. I loved it to death. You know, I love drinking, I love heroin, and went through a little pot phase, I guess. That was kind of whatever, but and then shortly after that, I'm 16, 17, and I'm drinking as much as I can, doing whatever I can. Like, someone give me a handful of pills, I wouldn't ask what they were. I didn't care, you know what I mean? I just wanted to get out of however I was feeling right now, you know? And that's how it was for me. And then shortly thereafter, you know, I got all this stuff going. And crime follows, man. And I started stealing cars. I started getting into trouble, going to juvenile hall, going to YA, and then finally making it to the big house. And I remember rolling into Donovan. I'm 19 years old. I go into Donovan State Prison. And there it says, no warning shots, right there on the thing. I was like, I made it, you know. He was a tough guy. I'm not kidding. I was like, yeah, cool. I got this, you know, a little, I weighed 150 pounds, you know. I want to do push-ups. I got a strong hip. Like, no one in here, period. I'm like, Roland, where you at? No one in here can beat me in a game of handball, pinochle, hopscotch, dominoes. I don't care what it is, I'll beat you. That's like my life's work is a very strong handball game. I'm pretty good at handball. You know, and my sentences started getting longer and longer. And before I knew it, you know, I would go into Donovan, and it was like Norm from Cheers. You know, whenever Norm would come in, he'd be like, Norm! Everyone would say, Norm. Rentley's cop, Reynolds, what's up, buddy? What'd you bring with you this time? Meaning, like, how much time did you bring with you? You know what I mean? Because you get sentenced in county jail. You come up, And I'm saying, I'm just doing a violation this time. I brought 4 years with me. 2.5 years. And I spent my better part of my 20s doing time, playing pinochle, telling lies, and dominating the handball court, basically. You know? And I thought that was just like, I thought that was the hand I was dealt, you know. And before I was to get out, I'd be pacing back and forth in my cell. I was like, dude, just don't drink. Just don't drink. I'm looking in the mirror. Come on, champ. Don't drink, man. Like, pep talking to myself. And I didn't know what the problem was. I didn't know I had alcoholism. I thought, you know, we're Irish, dude. We're entitled to drink. We're supposed to drink. You know what I mean? And I'm like, man, dude, don't drink, dude. You're going to be fine. Just don't drink. You're going to stay out of jail. And then I'd get out. 6 months later, I'm back on the handball court going, how the hell did I get here again, man? And I could not do the math. I was absolutely powerless, and I didn't know how I got there again. And then after a while, you know, and I would last a little bit, you know, I would last, you know, a couple months, you know, because out of just, you know, sheer willpower, dude, just don't go back to jail. Don't go back to prison. Get a job, get some chick, get some car, get some kooky apartment, and just go surf, stay out of trouble, man. And I would do that for a little bit, and then somewhere along the line, I'm sure you guys can understand this, that my man says it in the big book. He says, what about if you put a little whiskey in your milk, you know? What's the big deal? What can I hurt, you know? And it never started out like, hey, let's go drink and go on an antisocial crime spree. It never started like that. That wasn't the plan. The plan was like, hey, let's go get some of that new Lost Abbey ale, the new microbrew that's out, you know, because you don't want to go in and get, you know, like a 40 of malt liquor. I mean, that's trouble, you know. I don't want any trouble. I just want to like hang out and like drink like normal people. I used to like drinking like at Christmas time, because like you can camouflage your alcoholism. It's great. You're entitled to drink at Christmas. If you get smashed, it's like, ah, it's Christmas, whatever, let them go. So you got a couple reprieves out of the year where you're allowed to get smashed. But I couldn't figure it out. I'd work all day, and I would be driving home, and I'd be like, man, six pack. Or you see some sweaty bottle, on some billboard, you know, with some bikini chick next to it, and it's like, dude, Bud Light. Yeah, man, Bud Light never got me in trouble, you know. And my head tells me that I drink like, you know, what if we just buy some cognac, you know, buy some cognac and put your back to the fireplace. I don't have a fireplace, but put your back to the fireplace, you know what I mean, and spin it and listen to Sade or some John Legend or something cool, and you know, rub your feet into the bearskin rug. I don't own any of these things, you know what I mean? But that's what my head tells me, that's how it's going to be, man. And so I go in and I get whatever the hell, whatever it is, and I start drinking, and then the drink takes me, and I'm done, man. And I'm back in Chino or Donovan one more time. I've tried the relocation thing, living on the East Coast, Chicago. You know, I tried it all, and there I am one more time back in jail, just going, dude, what am I doing wrong here? I just could not figure it out. And you know how it is. If we're all in AA, and it's like, you know, people come in on court cards, people come in on drug court, whatever the help du jour, you know, whoever it is that sends you here is, every counselor, every parole agent, probation officer, everyone's always told me, dude, Mark, go to AA, dude. Go to AA. And I'm no stranger to AA prior to me getting sober this time. I had tried for a decade. The whole 10 years I was in and out of the joint, I was trying to get sober. You know, I knew I should get sober. And I came here, and I would sit in the back and just kind of be like, you know, post up, because I'm the coolest guy in the room, obviously. And I'd post up, see what chicks were there, see if I had done time with anybody, you know. this was a big deal at the time. Now it's just like, dude, what a dork, man. You know what I mean? And I'm in the back, and I would hear guys up here talking about, you know, spiritual awakening and prayer and meditation and all that stuff. I was raised Catholic, dude. If that was going to work for me, it would have worked a long time ago. It's not going to work for me, you know. And I shut it down. And I used to think, you know, I did heroin too, man. So my case is different. My case is absolutely different. You guys can't relate to me. You know, and I would just find a way to immediately separate myself from you, and it just, this thing wouldn't take, man. But I had heard what you guys had said. I had seen the stuff on the wall. And it's like, you're from OB, I'm not from OB. And that's what that stuff reminded me of. It was just like some yoga instructor, like, okay, we're going to do the downward dog, and we're going to pray and meditate now. And it's just like, dude, get out of here, man. I didn't want anything to do with it. I don't like patchouli. I don't like dreadlocks. I don't like any of that. You know what I mean? Like, no, I'm not growing dreads so I can get sober, dude. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to go to Lestat's and be some coffee shop geek. You know what I mean? I didn't want to do that. God knows I wanted to get sober, but I just didn't want to do the work. I didn't want to, I didn't want to hang out with you guys. I was too cool for you guys. And even in high school, I was like too cool for the lame kids and too lame for the cool kids. I just never kind of fit in, you know what I mean? So alcohol was great. It helped me with that, you know? So I finally got to the point where I was off parole, and I was in my apartment. I was pacing back and forth. I had a Browning 380. It's a handgun. I had it on the a little coffee table. I live in Golden Hill, and I'm in the same apartment, man. It's on the coffee table. I got plenty of booze. I got plenty of whatever the hell else I got. I got plenty of money. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't out of virtue that I got sober, and it wasn't lack of, you know, alcohol and drugs. It was just, I don't know, man. I got to the point where it was just like, you know, enough's enough. Like, what am I going to do? Because I couldn't get sober. And I don't want to say I couldn't get loaded, because I could get loaded. Some people say, hey, alcohol quit working for me. Alcohol has never, ever, 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 ever stopped working for me. Like, I'll take a drink right now, and my hair it won't be all stupid and spiky. It'll lay back all cool, Sinatra style. This stupid gap in my teeth will close up. You know, I'll gain 10 pounds of muscle. And everything I say is funny and witty. And that's what alcohol is going to do right now if I drink it. So I never got on board with it. Alcohol quit working for me. Good for you, dude. Why even come to AA then? Like, rad, you know? Whatever. But that's not my story, you know? Alcohol works, and it works well. What the hell was I even talking about? Jesus Christ. I got the gun on the friggin' coffee table. So I got this gun, and I'm just like, dude, just blow your brains out, man. Just blow your brains out. Because I didn't want to do any more time. I got the time thing down. I mean, every cop knows, and Donovan and Chino knows my name. I know all the fellas. I got the games down. I got all the swagger down. I can walk any yard in the system. I'm fine. I got that. Big deal. Good for you. You right? And it's just like, dude, I couldn't get sober, and there was just no hope in sight. It was the darkest day of my life. There's no hope in sight. And I'm pacing back and forth, and I'm looking at the gun, and I was like, dude, just grab it. Just grab it. So I grabbed it, and I'm just kind of dancing with it a little bit. And I put it to my head. I was like, just one little click. That's all it's going to take. One little click. Just do it quick. And I couldn't do it. I put it down. I put it under my chin. I'm like, go. And I couldn't do it. God. And I put it across the room, and I tried to sneak up on it and do it. I would try. You guys are laughing. That's funny. That's really funny. You're laughing at that. I wanted to blow my freaking brains out, dude. I wanted to die so bad. And I couldn't do it, man. I couldn't do it. And I was just like, dude, that was the worst day of my life. I was in absolute purgatory, man. And I remembered, you know, I had gone to AA. AA. Something in AA worked. There's a bunch of dudes in there. I've seen them over year after year. I believe their story. And I saw them in there. Every time I go back to AA, here's that dude again. He's still here. You're still sober. You're still sober. It's working for somebody. You know what I mean? I believe that he was alcoholic. So I'm like, you know, all right. And I made this deal with God that day. And I just said, you know what? My mother's higher power is pretty much who I pray to. That's the only one I really had. Since I've done the steps, my belief in a higher power has definitely changed and grown substantially. But all I needed was a start, you know. And I said this prayer to this whatever the hell God. And I just said, you know what, God? I'm going to go back to these stupid meetings, man. I'm going to go back to AA. And I'm going to get some greasy old-timer sponsor. You know, I'm going to get one of these old-timer dudes. You know who I'm talking about. I'm going to get one of these guys. I'm going to get one of these guys, and I'm going to do whatever he says. And I'm going to try this chicken shit, corny, lame, weak stuff on the wall. I'm going to try it. And because it was just trite and just like, it's just bugged the shit out of me. But I was like, that's all I had to grasp. I had nothing else. And I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go back, and I'm going to give it my best shot. And when I do something like that, when I give something my all, you know, I come at you with all guns blazing. Like I'm in it to win it, you know. And I made a deal with God, and I said, you know what? And after a year, I'm gonna give it a year. And if it doesn't work after a year, I'm gonna take this gun, and I'm gonna shoot cops until they kill me. You know, kind of a suicide by cop thing. That way, you kind of have like at least a cool story on the yard, you know. Like, dude, you hear about Mark? Bro, he took out like 5 cops. And I wanted some, you know, some Matrix style where I'm dodging bullets. Like, don't, you know, it's jumping sideways whilst shooting. You know what I mean? Something cool like that. I mean, I'm not a murderer. I didn't want to kill any real people, but I at least wanted to take out a few cops. So it's like, you know what I mean? Just at least have a little, whatever, a blaze of glory, I guess. I don't know. Billy the Kid stuff. I don't know. Yeah, obviously, I was insane. Obviously, I was delusional, and I was insane. But you know, I was under the lash of alcoholism. That's what I was driven to. And I go to Cedar Street Men's. And there's this old Jewish dude from New York named Peter Fleshman, and I saw him, and I'd heard his shtick over the years. Dude, I'd seen Seinfeld. And the whole New York Jew thing's funny, you know. Curb Your Enthusiasm's funny, but it's like, come on. That's just how he was. And I walked up to him. And I said, you know, Peter, I've heard you for a lot of years. I basically told him the story I just told you, and I said, I need you to sponsor me. I'm dying. I don't know what to do. I'm dying. And he's like, whenever I talk about Peter, I get all weird. And he says, why don't you come to my house, man? We got a lot of work to do. I'm like, all right. And I'm thinking, work to do. Like, what are we gonna do? Like, what's just read them. You know what I mean? I don't know what the hell you're supposed to do. And I go to his house, man, and he's got this nice little house up in Del Cerro. Pool, you know, the dogs, the wifey, you know, the brawn coffee pot, you know, a real nice coffee pot. You guys got it going on, man. It's brawn. Brawn's a big deal. Anyway, I don't know why, whatever. Anyway, so I go up there, and I'm just like, all right, cool, what do we do? And he starts at, you know, he starts at the very beginning, and it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous and more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. It goes on to say, this is what, you know, the I'm blowing it. The purpose of this book is to show precisely what the first 100 alcoholics did. And he said, what does the word precise mean? I'm looking at this word jughead. I'm closing this thing. It says, jughead. He says, what does the word precise mean? And so we look at it. He's got a dictionary. I'm like, oh, dude, this is why I dropped out of school, man. Precise. So we look up the word precise. You know, and it means exact, you know. And we went through, he says, Mark, that's all we're going to do. We're going to do exactly what the book says. When it says to write, we're going to write. When it says to pray, we're going to pray. And that's it. Nothing more, nothing less, buddy. And I was like, all right. So he starts reading. He gets into the doctor's opinion, and he's like, do you understand that? And I don't think I remember exactly, you know, it was weird. I'm just sobering up, dude. I'm in a fog, you know. And he's just reading me this book, and I'm like, why is this guy doing this? Why is this guy sitting here reading me this book like he's my freaking grandfather or something, you know? And I it dawned on me a couple years later, the reason he sat there and read it to me was because he knew who I was. He knew that if I was like, hey, man, I'm going to sponsor you. Read the first 164 pages. All right, cool piece. You know what I mean? He knew I wasn't going to read that. I didn't read it for anyone. I wouldn't listen to you. You know what I mean? So he sat me down, and he read me the first 164 pages. Dude, I'm like nodding out, but I was there. You know, I was present. You know what I mean? I was in a fog, dude. I don't know. But he's sitting there reading, and it would come to the, and I got a book too, and it would come to like the end of a chapter, and I'd be like, all right, cool, he's in the end right now. He's in the end right now. Chapter 5! And I'm like, come on, dude! Give me a break, man! He just, oh my god, the most long-winded dude you'll ever meet in your life. And he kept reading, and I was just like, you know what, cool, at least, you know, I stayed out of trouble today. Stayed out of trouble, I'm sober. He said, Mark, I want you to be here at 6 o'clock tomorrow, da 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 da. I'm like, all right. Now, Peter was the kind of guy, man, you get there at 6:02, he's gone. You know what I mean? He's gone. So, like, Peter's philosophy was, early is on time is late. You know what I mean? You just get there early. So I get there, and I followed this guy around. Went to a meeting at night, you know, beginning of my sobriety. Went to a meeting every night of the week. And I didn't know what I was doing, man. I weighed 150 pounds. My eyes were sucked in the back of my head. My skin was kind of yellow, you know. I looked like a monster, man. I looked like a walking dead. But I didn't know what else to do. I'd made this deal with God, and I was just like, all right, here we go, man. And Peter was cool. Before I knew it, you know, we started doing the steps, and I got into my fourth step, and I had this big spiral notebook. And I broke it out, and I just started. He says, Mark, I want you to write a list of all your resentments. And I'm like, I can handle that. Cops. Boom. That led the list. Authority. Bam, courts, and I had just poison and venom was just coming out, and I just wrote all this stuff day after day after day after day. And then I finally ended up doing the columns, man, and he goes, hey, Peter, you know, I got that thing done. He's like, the thing, meaning the fourth step. Hey, Mark, Peter, I got the fourth step done, right? And I didn't know what it was called. I didn't know what I was doing. You know, and I was completely oblivious. I just did whatever this guy told me. I did whatever he told me to do. If he had told me to wear a clown suit, yeah, I want you to wear a clown suit next week at the meeting. I'd be like, all right. You know what I mean? Yeah, why not? What do you want me to do, man? I'll do it, dude. I just had a gun in my head, you know? I just had a gun in my head a couple months ago at this point, you know? So I'm doing whatever he says. He says, Mark, we're going to go up to Los Angeles. We're going to go to Bellflower, and we're going to hear a guy speak. You know, some big shot was speaking up there. I was like, all right, cool, whatever. And he says, I want you to bring that thing with you, the four-step with you. I'm like, all right. So we go up, and I start reading to him. Oh, before we go up there, he says, hey, stop by Washington Mutual. I think it's Chase Bank now. Stop by Washington Mutual. I was like, hey, that's my bank too, man. Cool. So I go in, and I'm working for this sheet metal company right now. I was killing it. I was making like $40 an hour, and we were working on the Indian reservations. So it was like prevailing wage, and I had a bunch of money for a sober guy just getting sober. You know, it helped. You know, and he goes to check my bank account, and I got. I thought you went to Bank of America. He's like, I do. I want to check your bank account. I'm like, whatever, dude. So I give him my thing. I got 12 G's in the bank. You know what I mean? I got 12 grand in there. And he's like, okay, I just wanted to check. And I was like, whatever. It was weird. You know what I mean? Are you charging me for this stuff? Anyway, so we go up to the, we're driving to Los Angeles. And we leave at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, man. And it's like, you know, traffic, whatever. And I'm reading my four step, and I'm going through it. I get to this part where it's my dad and all this other stuff, and I'm crying. Like, I don't even know why I'm crying. Like, I'm crying because someone in their meeting said they were crying, and I thought I was supposed to cry too. And it just, whatever, it just struck a nerve, and I started crying. I haven't cried since like Good Will Hunting. You know what I mean? Good Will Hunting is a very sad movie to me. He goes, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. That's the part that guys get through. Whatever. Watch a lot of television. So we go. And I'm reading him this thing, and I'm like crying. And Peter was a chain smoker, dude. He's just like, he needs to look over, and I'm crying, dude. I'm reading him this thing, dude. And he's just like, he's heard it all. Dude, you're not going to impress this guy or shock this guy. And he's just like, what else you got? What else you got, kid? What else you got? And I read it to him. We get all the way to Bellflower. We listen to this big shot speak, and we come all the way back down. I'm just trying to read. I got the little light on right here. And then this, and I'm just going through this whole thing. Dude, I wrote a tome. Like an inventory, man, a written list. Like I wasn't a slouch when I came to my fourth step. I was like, I'll write a list of resentments, because he knew how to get me. He said, I want you to write a list of resentments. He didn't tell me about the other three columns. You know what I mean? He just told me the one. I'm like, oh, dude, start with an A. You know what I mean? I don't like antelopes. You know what I mean? I don't like apples. You know what I mean? And I was thorough, dude. I was thorough, you know? And I went through it. And then he, you know, revealed to me what I had to do with the rest of it. And I was like, oh, God. But I got it done. And so it's like midnight by now. We're like in, you know, Orange County still. We're coming down. And because you go to the meeting after the meeting before the meeting. This is his ritual. It's like all day thing. And I'm hanging around with these old timer dudes. And these guys are just like, who is this? Who's this skeleton dude you're with, Peter? You know what I mean? And so we're driving down, and I'm still reading. And then he lived up in Del Cerro around here somewhere. Lived up in Del Cerro, and I'm still reading. He goes, come on in, man. Let me put some coffee on. It's like 2 a.m. And I'm still reading. He had his wife. His wife's name's Joy. And Joy was upstairs doing something. She came down. She has weird hours. She's a flight attendant. So she came down. And I was like, hi. You know, I'm like, dude, it's 2 a.m. I feel like I'm breaking into your house right now or something, man. And she's like, oh, how you doing? Like it was just common. Like, there's some dude at their house at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know. But that was that's their lifestyle. They, you know, embrace AA as their lifestyle, and it's very common to have someone in their house at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know. And so I'm reading this thing on this couch. I'm sitting there, and I wrap it up. I'm like, bam, I'm done. And he's just like, all right, Marky, that was pretty thorough, man. That was pretty good. And I was like, cool. All right, now what? You know what I mean? When do I get mine? Like, all right, I'm done. Cool. And he's like, look, I want you to go home, buddy. I want you to take an hour and kind of reflect on that. I want you to see if God, and pray to God to have him take away all that stuff, you know. And I was like, okay, an hour. He's like, not 47 minutes, not 68 minutes. I want you to take an hour. Just set an alarm. Do whatever you got to do. It says exactly, precisely what they're going to do in this book. And I was like, all right. So I went home and I did that, and I was scared. Not 10 minutes left. Jesus. What a jip. There weren't even cakes. There were no cakes. All right. So anyway, so I go... You shouldn't have told me that. All right, so I go home, and the sixth step for me, even now, you know, I've been almost 7 years, the sixth step is absolutely, without a doubt, the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. Like the ninth step, like no big deal, man. Like the fourth step, some writing. Ninth step, you're just like, hey, here's the money I stole, or whatever. You're making amends is making amends. But the sixth step is the one that has changed my life, no doubt. And the 12 and 12 talks about it. It leads with, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. And that's a pretty bold statement. You know, you wouldn't just say that for no reason. And it didn't dawn on me till about the World Cup last year. I'm a big soccer fan, man, and I'm getting into work one morning early to watch this game. We have cable at the I cut hair for a living, and there was we have cable at the shop. I don't have it at the house. We have all these high power channels where you can get all this European stuff. And I wanted to watch this soccer game. And I go into work, it's like 7 o'clock, and on the 94 on my way to work, I always pray because there's the Holy Cross cemetery right there. Coca-Cola's across the street, and it's this big blue dome. And I don't know why, I'm not really Catholic, man, but it reminds me of my mother, I guess. I don't know. So I do the little sign of the cross, whatever, and I say the third step prayer, and I say the seventh step prayer. And I had this great prayer, man. It was spiritual, dude. And I'm driving, I was like, yeah. And I look up, and I see this highway patrol guy pulling this guy over, and I go, you scumbag. That fast. I just got finished saying, amen, you scumbag. Not a nanosecond had passed. Oh, I'm the spiritual guy. Thanks God, you scumbag. I mean, that fast. And I was like, dude, I'm 6 years sober, man. What am I doing? When am I going to grow up, you know? When am I going to grow up? And I was like, you know what, God? You know, take this away from me, this hatred of cops. And you got to understand that I hated everything. I hate the fact that cops have that walkie-talkie on the side of their thing right there. Right? And instead of going, 2 out of 12, we got to, you know what I mean? They crane their neck, 2 out of 12. And I hate that. Coast to coast, they do that. In Europe, they do that. 2 out of 12, 16, Mary Nina, we got to show for. And I hate it. It runs through my veins. I can't stand their mustaches, their flat tops. I can't stand it. I don't even like firemen. You know what I mean? Because they're too closely related to policemen. I don't know. Whatever. Let the house burn. I don't care. You know what I mean? I don't want you guys on my property. You know what I mean? And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, man, I just got finished praying. And here I go saying, you know what, this scumbag cop. And I go, you know what, God, help me, you know, I'm entirely ready, God, for you right now to take away my hatred of authority. You know, the sixth step, I'm entirely ready. Because most of the time the answer is I'm not ready. I'm justified in my anger, you know. And at this point, man, I was just like, you know what, God, I'm ready. I'm ready for you to take away my hatred of authority, of cops, of the system, of law enforcement, bureaucracy, whatever it is, take it from me, God. I can't deal with it. Because how am I going to go from hero to zero like that? Say a prayer, see a cop, and just ruin everything. You know, how that fast? And because it's robbing me of happiness. You know, so I get into work and I had this great prayer and I prayed to God. I was like, all right, cool. Nothing for me happens immediately in AA ever. But a couple weeks goes by, World Cup's still going. It's coming down to the finals. And like this guy comes in, short Mexican dude, Guatemalan dude. I'm like, yeah, how you doing, man? He's like, cool. He sits down. We're watching the game. And he knows, dude. He's knowledgeable. It was like Paraguay is playing. And he knows all these Paraguayan. I'm like, dude, how do you know that? He's a nerd. He's a soccer nerd like I'm a nerd. I'm just like, we're talking. Da, da, da. And we're talking scores, highlights. Did you see that goal? And this guy's a dork with it. You know what I mean? And I like him. You know what I mean? I like him. So I'm cutting his hair. I'm like, this guy's cool, dude. And I'm like, soccer guys need soccer guys. You know what I mean? Because everyone's like, oh, football. But like soccer guys are like, whatever, dude. You're soccer. Soccer's gay. You know what I mean? Whatever. But I need this guy in my life because I like soccer and we always have soccer at the shop. I played it. You know, I watch it. I love it. Anyway, so he leans forward and he crosses his leg and he's got a gun, a pistol in his ankle. I'm like, damn, bro. What are you expecting, trouble or what? Man? What's going on? And he goes, oh, no, I'm SDPD. And I was just like, cool. Yeah. You know, what'd you have to go do that for, man? You know? Why would you have to do that, dude? I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, dude, we're getting along, we're talking footy, everything's great. You gotta ruin it like that. And I finish the haircut, give him a good looking cut. I'm like, all right, man, thanks, bro. And he leaves, and I was just like, oh, that was weird. And then a couple of days later, he comes in, he's got his kid. He brings his kid with him. His kid's wearing a little soccer uniform. He just got out of soccer practice. He goes, "Hey, Mark, I want you to cut this guy's hair." I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And it just melts your heart, man. You know what I mean? It's just like, "Oh, dude, yeah, come on up here." So I cut his hair, and then it dawned on me. I was like, "Dude, this is what I prayed for, man. This is what I prayed for. I asked God to take this stuff away from me." And so God just comes in and brings us, you know what I mean? This guy's got a burner in his friggin' ankle, man. And it's just God of my understanding, man, is funny as shit, dude. You know, and it kind of softened me up, you know. And then a couple weeks after that, he brings his partner in. Right? John Baker looking dude from Chips, you know what I mean? I'm just like, "Cool, man, have a seat." You know, he's not as cool as Oscar, but he is what, you know, Oscar is the Guatemalan dude. So I cut his hair, and then all of a sudden I get these CHP guys, because they all know each other. All these cops know each other. And I just want to, crawl out of my skin, dude. You know what I mean? I'm just like, this is what I wanted, man. The stuff I pray for God to, you know, to give me strength, and he puts difficulty in my life to get me stronger. You know, that's how I understand it. And I'm just like, all right, dude. And then after a while, it's been like 6 months, I'm cutting these guys' hair. And the guy, you know, these guys are my bros now. You know, like, "I'm going to go see Martin." They're talking to each other. "Hey, did Tyler come in?" And, you know, they're like, "Oh, my God." And so, like, all of a sudden, we're on first-name basis with these guys. And one of the guys goes, "Hey, Mark, did you should go on a ride-along with us?" Right? "Should go on a ride-along." And I'm just like, does this guy know I did, like, 10 years in the joint, dude? Does he want me to do a ride? The answer is no, bro. I'm not going on a ride-along with you. Appreciate the offer. Are you joking me, dude? You know what I mean? But that's what I'm saying. That, like, that's what I pray for, man. And the sixth step for me is still to the day is the hardest one, because I'm justified in all these feelings, man. And when really I'm not. Like, it's the biggest deal in the world to me, you know. So I got through that. I would say that's my seventh step. When all that stuff happens, like, God, just take this stuff from me. And I get through, and from my fourth step stemmed the majority of my amends, you know, on the eighth step. So I got this list in front of me. And Peter was smart, dude. Peter knew that I was making a gang of money, and he knew how to get to me. And he wanted me to make these financial amends first. I mean, first one, he's like, "Okay, you owe your dad $5,000. I owe my dad $5,000. He co-signed this motorcycle for me. I laid it down and I crashed it, and I was just like, "Yo, I owed my dad $5,000. I was like, "Whatever, man, I'm drinking, I'm doing my thing," and I just, the paying my father back at the time was not the top of my list, you know. And so my dad, in order to restore, you know, to keep his credit golden, he paid the bike off, you know, so I owe the guy $5,000. And I go, "I owe my dad $5,000, and I feel absolutely rotten about it." He's like, "All right, why don't you handle that one first?" So I fly to Washington, D.C. My dad's a Pentagon, he's a company man, you know, he worked at the Pentagon for 32 years. And I go over there, and I got $5,000 in an envelope in my back pocket. And I go, "Hey, Dad, you know, I'm probably like a year sober at this time, you know, maybe like 9 months sober." And I go, "Hey, Dad, you know that bike, you know, I brought that money, I owe you for that bike." And he's like, "You know, Marky, I'm just glad you're sober, man." And I'm just like, "Yes, dude." He's like, "You don't have to pay me back, son, you know what I mean? I'm just glad you're sober." And I was like, "Hell yeah." So I call Peter, I'm like, "Hey, yeah, Peter, man, I talked to my dad. He said it's a no-go with the $5,000. But Peter was smart, dude. He's just like, "Hey, asshole, leave that money under his pillow. You're not leaving that house with that money." And I was like, "Damn." I was like, "Hey, Dad, Peter's not going for it, man. I gotta leave you that money, you know?" And he's like, "The answer's no." And I was like, "Peter, he's not going for it." And so my dad goes, "Well, tell you what, I'll give you pay me 10 cents on the dollar." And I go, "Hey, Peter, you said 10 cents on the dollar, man. You guys are, I almost put them on the phone together to seal the deal, I swear to God." Finally, they agreed on 10 cents on the dollar. I paid him. My dad let me off the hook for that. But that money, don't get it twisted. That money went toward financial amends. And Peter knew the kind of guy that I am. Like, if I have, you know, because financial amends for me, a selfish guy like me, was a financial investment in my sobriety. It was like, at the point, you know, I'm $5,000 into this thing now, you know what I mean? You know, 15, you know, all of a sudden I'm 15,000 into my amends, you know what I mean? I'm working all week to pay people back. This is the most spiritual thing I've ever done in my life, you know what I mean? And Peter knew, he was a smart guy. He was like, because at the point now, I was like, "You know what, dude, that's $15,000. I'm not going to drink now. I just paid $15,000. I'm staying sober on the strength of that, man. How's that? Jesus, I'm financially invested in AA, Morgan." You know, and he knew. He was a smart guy, man. And he passed away a couple of years ago. I miss him terribly. He was a great guy. He was really cool. And You know, AA, like I said, man, AA is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And, you know, I sponsor guys, and I go to a lot of meetings, you know, and I do what I can. You know, what the answer is yes. When someone asks me to do something, even if it's something stupid, hey, grab these coffee butts. It's like, or these coffee cans, or for the butt cans or whatever. I'm like, all right, yeah, whatever. You know, I just do it, and it's just like it's automatic now. And I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned especially through the men of AA. You know, when a bill comes in the mail, it's like, all right, give me this thing, dude. Just write the check, get it. And I've grown up. I've become a man in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I give it, you know, I give life my best shot. You know, there's nothing. I don't have to do any of this stuff alone, like you were saying. And there's nothing that's happened that can happen to me that hasn't happened to someone in here, you know. And I've always got that to rely on. I mean, the fellowship is awesome, you know. And I pray that what grace has given me gets if you're new, it gets passed on to you, man. And it starts with the steps. Like that's the thing that has absolutely changed my life. And what I got to read? How much time I got here?
You have enough time. You got
5 more
minutes.
All right, and. Before I met, chapter 5. I remember I was at a meeting in La Mesa. I was at Over the Bridge is the name of the meeting. It was a Step in Tradition study. And I weighed 150 pounds and I was sitting there and I was on fire with AA, man. And I had a highlighter. You know what I mean? I'm the guy with the highlighter. I went from Chino Central to me having a highlighter. Big hard guy. And I'm reading, and I'm sitting there, I got the book, and Peter, and I didn't ask him to sponsor me at the time. This is prior to me sponsoring. This is kind of what nudged me in his direction. He grabs my 12 and 12, and it says, page 24, it says, why all this insistence that every AA must hit bottom first? The answer is that few people will sincerely try to practice the AA program unless they have hit bottom. For practicing AA's remaining 11 steps means the adoption of attitudes and actions that most alcoholic who is still drinking can't dream of taking. Who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant? Who wants to confess his faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Who cares anything about a higher power, let alone meditation and prayer? Who wants to sacrifice time and energy in trying to carry AA's message to the next sufferer? No, the average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. Under the lash of alcoholism, we are driven to AA, and there we discover the fatal nature of our situation. Then, and only then, do we become as open-minded to conviction and as willing to listen as the dying can be. We stand ready to do anything which will lift this merciless obsession from us. And that's what got me, that's what gets me by, man. It's just, don't forget, don't ever get it twisted, that the reason I'm here is under the lash of alcoholism. And I forget that. You know, things get so good. And what's so scary about AA for me now at 6 and almost 7 years sober is that AA will give me everything I need to turn my back and be like, hey, thanks, man. I got it from here. And he kind of slowly, and I see myself doing it sometimes, you know. And some of the darkest days of my life have been when I'm sober. Some of the darkest, worst days of my life have been while I'm sober in AA, you know. And what's scary is just that I have everything I need to just be like, I'm cool, I got this. You know, help me with this, but don't help me with this because I got this. And it's hard for me. It's one thing to believe in God. It's another thing to trust in God. And trusting in God for me is a daily struggle. You know, I wish I could tell you it's different. You know, I wish I could tell you that I had this, when I got sober, I had this overwhelming, powerful Bill Wilson type experience. My spiritual awakening has definitely been of the educational variety. You know, it took me a long time to grasp this stuff, and I pray that, like I said earlier, whatever, you know, what grace has given me, I pray that it goes on to you, man. If you're new, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And my name is Mark Reynolds, and thanks a lot.